You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode was produced thanks to our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren, with me today is...
Wes.
And...
Chris.
And today, I have felt a great disturbance in the podcast, because we are talking about the Force, so I'm going to need you to all get out a blood test to find out how many midichlorians you have.
No!
What?
No, why is that still canon?
Okay.
Why?
Okay, so actually, I think that would be an interesting thing to start off with, is like, why did people react so negatively to the idea of midichlorians? I'm very curious to know what you guys think about that.
I remember the first movie and Obi-Wan and just talking to friends about it, and it was a really cool idea that you could harness some kind, like anyone could harness some kind of spiritual force, and the idea that some people can like consciously do it and other people unconsciously do it, right? Like, you know, Luke is very aware of some kind of connection, and Obi-Wan like helps make that explicit. Mm-hmm. As like skeptical as Han Solo is, he somehow manages to get out all these scrapes, right?
Right.
So like, you know, call it like luck maybe or something like that. But I like the idea that it was more like, it was like a powerful like presence that everybody was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the science happened.
Like, if you can call it science, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I think when it comes right down to it, it breaks theme.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And I've talked about this before on the blog about the importance of having a nice theme for your world. You know, it makes it like more memorable, makes it feel more cohesive, makes it so that when you make up stuff for your world, they don't just feel random and contrived. And it was clear that the theme of Star Wars, despite the fact that it, you know, we've got all this spaceships or and stuff, the focus has never really been on the technology. It's been on this like forced mysticism. And so suddenly then using mitochondrians to explain it just feels out of nowhere. It feels like it doesn't fit with what we know of the Force and the mysticism that surrounds it.
Right.
I do have a total random idea,
mm-hmm.
that's not based on anything for why they included it.
Oh, yeah? Why?
Well, okay, so we go back, like, back in time for the prequels, where there is, like, a very well-established Jedi Order. So they did that to try to make them seem like, oh, you know, these Jedi are, like, super in touch with the Force. So in touch that they know exactly how to, like, measure it in people.
Yeah, they know how much force you have. So, I mean, I think that's not too far off. They were added because, like, George Lucas was lazy and wanted a really easy way to be like, this kid's force power is over 9,000. and so he literally did that. It was, like, over 20,000 or whatever the number was. It was apparently off the chart. Their chart only goes up to 20,000. And previously, you know, the way the Force worked has been extremely loosey-goosey, right? But it was sort of implied that it was more about a state of mind and, like, a state of being than about, like, some kind of inborn Force gene or whatever, right? And so making it about, like, well, now I have a measurable Force power level is, like, makes the Force way less interesting and mysterious and brings it down to what feels like a video game power. Where it's like, well, that's just as strong in the Force as you'll ever be, because you only have a certain number of midichlorians.
I like how you cast it into a video game power, because that could, like, suppose that there's a monster that has, like, a midichlorian drain effect, right? I've lost three levels of Jedi.
I've taken permanent Metachlorian drain. I mean, I'm, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you dug far enough into the EU if there was some kind of Metachlorian vampire. Just, you know, like sucks the Metachlorians right out of you. it's probably in there somewhere. But, like, I do want to, like, chase the video game power train a little bit farther, which is, like, that's part of the reason why. Not the only reason, certainly, but part of the reason why the prequel films and a lot of the extended universe material, the Force hasn't felt very interesting, right? Because it's like, okay, so the Force is a set of superpowers that Jedi have, and one of those powers is the ability to block laser blasts, and one of them is the ability to shoot lightning out of your hands. That's a bad power, though. Only bad people have that power. And, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, once you get into that and you lose, like, the theme and the aesthetic of the Force, it just becomes another set of generic magic powers. And it's, you know, like, it's frankly not that interesting. It's sort of like how in certain extended universe novels they would get into, like, modifying their lightsabers and being like, my lightsaber has a fire crystal, so it, like, lights you on fire. Well, it's like, well, my lightsaber is an extra foot long, so I have more reach. And it's like, once you start examining it at that close a level, the whole conceit of using a sword in a setting where everyone has guns really starts to break down. And you're like, why do we even use these at all if we actually care about them for their physics properties?
Now, if I remember correctly, in the original trilogy, it's not really clear whether or not lightsabers are actually part of the Jedi powers.
Because
Jedis use them. Yeah, and it's not actually, like, clear if operating a lightsaber at all requires, like, you know, magic, and that it's kind of, like, magical in some way. Now that we have the more recent movies, and we've seen Finn pick up a lightsaber and use it, even though, as far as we know, he doesn't have any force sensitivity.
Right, I mean, well, in the original, we did see Han Solo use a lightsaber to cut open a dead Tauntaun. Everyone's favorite Han Solo survival lessons corner. So it's like, you know, there's the implication that, like, you probably don't need to have active force powers to turn a lightsaber on. But there's also always been at least some implication that using a lightsaber is somehow, like there's a reason Jedi use them other than, like, because they make effective weapons. Because a Jedi who uses the Force to shoot better with a blaster would be, like, way more effective than one who's using just a melee weapon, right? So the implication has always been that they're somehow, like, tuned to the Force in some way. And the various extended universe materials have tried to answer that in fairly unsatisfactory manner. I think part of it is just because the lightsaber and the Force are actually kind of different aesthetics. Because, like, the Force as an aesthetic is all about, like, this, like, energy that comes from life, right? And that's, like, how a Jedi gets their power and, like, it, like, lets them foresee things and all of these, like, very mystical abilities. And the lightsaber is, like, a +5 sword of cutting. And it's, like, how does that really relate to the Force? And it doesn't super well, which is one of the reasons why it's always been a little strange.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my best headcanon is that using a lightsaber is pretty dangerous because they cut so easily. And Jedi, I mean, one of the primary Force powers is really just this kind of, like, extra sensory perception and control, where your body has more precise movements and is attuned to the Force, you know, and whatever. And that is just, they're not dangerous for Jedi to use in the same way they are for regular people, because they have better control. That's the best I can think of. But other than that, there's not really.
Yeah,
not really, I'm clear. Totally on board with that. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, like, the lightsabers give the Jedi a little bit of extra novelty. But I think it's worth noting that in New Hope, the first Star Wars movie, the main aspect we see of the Jedi, and by extension of the Force, since for most of the time they're effectively interchangeable, is that the big element we see with Obi-Wan is that he's supposed to be wise. Like, he can also kick butt, but that's not his primary characteristic, right? Like, he doesn't spend most of the movie killing stormtroopers. He does have a fight with Darth Vader, but that's, like, mostly about their, like, emotional journey. And most of what Obi-Wan does in that movie is say wise things. And he has, like, ideas and plans, and he tells them, okay, I'm gonna go you know, disable the tractor beam so we can escape, and nobody else thinks of that, even though that seems kind of obvious in retrospect. You know,
yeah,
things like that. And I think that then when Luke has his Force moment, it's all about like, turn off the turret and computer and trust yourself, right? Like, trust in your ability and your wisdom, as it were. So, like, that's sort of the theme of the Force in the first mm-hmm. movie. And then I think in Empire and Jedi, it kind of transitions into the Force is, like, an externalization of your inner conflict. Because, like, that's the whole idea in Empire, the big question, and then also in Jedi, even, is, like, is Luke going to turn to the dark side? Is he going to be tempted and become a jerk? And it's not 100% clear what turning to the dark side means. Like, certainly Palpatine thinks it will mean that he will be on, that Luke will be on his team. But it's like the conflict that Luke is facing, and then also the conflict that Vader is facing, are sort of, the Force is like an externalization of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so I think it's worth, like, you know, looking exactly at what the Force is supposed to be, because if we're, like, building a magic system around this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
One of the things you start with is, like, okay, where does this power that people have as magic come from? In that case, it's the Force. And it's a little weird to think about exactly what the Force is supposed to be, because it's definitely frequently associated with life and living things. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely not in living things, right? Like, if Luke is gonna, you know, lift the ship, he doesn't, like, you know, kill something and take its life force from it in order to do that, right?
No, he just piles himself down with small animals.
So it's like this ambient life force that is not actually in living things, but is sort of floating around. And we also, it doesn't seem, the space and time don't seem to matter. Like, it doesn't, you know, Luke can go off in his, like, spaceship by himself in the middle of space, you know, not around anything else that's alive, and still use the Force, right?
Yeah, it's because he's got a trunk of small animals in the back of the X-Wing.
So, it's like, I guess maybe the thought is that space and time are just, like, illusions in this setting, and it doesn't, you know, it's a life force, but it doesn't have to be around life or in life in any way.
Well, and is there, you guys can probably, it should help me here, are there any examples of using Force powers and the Jedi or Sith or whatever, like, gets physically drained from that? I mean, Luke, like, is all sweaty and has a hard time with, like, the spaceship when he's training with Yoda, but I thought that's just because Yoda was, like, making him work out really hard.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay. So, in the films, as far as we can see, again, lifting things with the Force and using those, like, manifestations of Force power seems to be more a question of your state of mind. Like, Yoda's right. Got that whole, like, size matters not thing, and assuming he's not just, like, pulling stuff out of his butt here, that implies that lifting things with the Force is not a matter of, like, force per square inch, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's not a matter of, like, exerting pressure with your brain. So it's about, like, thinking you can do it is kind of how it works. Now, that makes it hard to measure and hard to be like, well, how much exactly could Luke lift with the Force if he wanted to? And it's like, I don't know, big question marks. You know, again, if you want to get into the extended universe stuff, there's a whole bunch of novels where they're like, you can lift this much force with this much stamina, and then you will be tired and need to rest. Because your stamina bar will have been depleted. And it's like, you know, it makes it, again, that's further towards the video game power side of things.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. The thing that gets me is, again, I mean, you're right, Warren, that it is often, the way it is shown, it often feels like Force is more of a reflection of state of mind than of something external that people are tapping into. But at the same time, whenever they describe what it is, they go back to this life energy thing.
Yeah.
And the thing that gets me, especially after some of the later, you know, The Last Jedi with Luke talking about just how big the Force is and how big all this life and death is that when we get back to the balance, and we think of this concept, which is sometimes silly, about there being a balance in the Force, and that is somehow expressed through Jedi and Sith, the idea that a few guys who wield the Force will actually upset the balance of the Force when the Force is, like, all of the life mm-hmm. in the entire universe just mm-hmm. seems really silly.
It's a very delicate balance. It's, like, it's a balance of, like, you know, 10-ton weights, but they're so precise that, like, even, like, you put, like, a little gram on one side, throws the whole thing out of whack.
Yeah, the only time, like, the balance really made sense to me is in A New Hope when they blow up Alderaan and Obi-Wan's like, oh my god, like, I just felt like the biggest disturbance in the Force. And like, since they say it's like a power like generated by like life, then blowing up a planet would throw it out of balance. Like, mm-hmm. that made sense to me.
Right.
Nobody really talked about that when they blew up like four planets in The Force Awakens.
Well, I mean, I don't think something like that. I could be wrong about this, but I don't think the concept of balance in the Force is ever mentioned in the original trilogy. I could be wrong about that. But like, as far as I can tell, the concept of balance in the Force basically just grows out of George Lucas's poor understanding of Buddhism. I think is what that comes from. And it's like, you can see sort of hints of it because in the original trilogy, they talk about the dark side and it's like, okay, well, if there's a dark side, that implies that the thing everyone else is doing is the light side, even though they never actually say light side. You can kind of intuit that there's a light side, and then you can be like, oh, well, there is a light side and a dark side. If there's two sides, maybe it could be in balance, and that, like, kind of, in some people's mind, looks like the various, the image that they're used to seeing, the yin-yang symbol, which that's not what it's called. It has an actual name, but, you know, the one everyone's familiar with, right? And they're like, that it must be like that, and it's like, okay, that's a really poor understanding of what that symbol means. But the idea of balance in the Force is a really weird one that really only comes up in the prequels. We can get into that later. Chris, I want to circle back to what you're talking about, this idea of the Force being like from life. This is definitely an idea that they say and to sound mystical and then like never explore the implications of, right? It's like, what does that mean exactly? That I'm pretty sure that the whole idea of it being like created by all living things is just supposed to make it sound harmonious and beautiful, right? It's supposed to make the Force sound cool and sound like a good thing. And what that means is about as relevant as when Obi-Wan says it binds the galaxy together. It's like, so it's dark energy then? It's what keeps the galaxy from flying apart despite the amount of energy and mass involved.
That notion there, I guess talking about it in that way seems to make the balance thing, I mean, it makes it plausible to me in that if it's some kind of force that like binds things and keeps it together, then it's some scientific phenomena that seeks equilibrium, right? And then they just adopt, you know, their own agenda on what that means in terms of good and bad, like later on. And then justify it in their own ways.
That's possible. I mean, again, like it gets weird because when you say balance and then you have two sides of something, the place everyone goes is a balance between those two sides. And that seems to be the official like movie canon now, Last Jedi spoilers, I guess. When you have Luke being like, oh, well, yeah, there's a powerful, like, dark force hole in this planet because this is also where the Jedi built their temple. So powerful light, powerful dark. And it's like, okay, Luke, good job. Thanks for making that canon. So now we have officially, the official film canon is now that the Star Wars universe is one where any amount of good force will be cosmically countered by an amount of bad force. Like the universe is like saying, you need to like, you guys are being too nice. I'm gonna make a guy over here who kills puppies. That's my plan.
I mean, I personally I feel like there are ways that you could do similar things without having it just be like everything we fight for is pointless because we're also accidentally creating bad things. Like the idea that the Force has a certain balance to it, but if it's bigger than people, right? Then it's like, well, we have sort of a certain amount of light energy that Jedi can use and a certain amount of dark energy that Sith can use. And they're about equally available. So if we have, like, you know, several hundred Jedi and two Sith, the Sith are more powerful because there's only two of them using that dark energy. Or something like that. But we still, you know, if there's no Sith, then there's nobody to use that dark energy, right? So we still have every reason to fight the Sith and get in their way. You know, the problem comes when we have this narrative that somehow by doing good things or using the light side of the Force, it doesn't matter.
Right. And it gets super weird because it's like, again, then you get into the questions of like, the whole concept of balance between good and evil is absurd, right? Because you're mixing two ways of looking at the universe. In one way, you've got good and evil, you know, the sort of Judeo-Christian way of looking at it, where there is like a good thing and, you know, in heaven, for lack of a better term, and then a bad thing in hell. And then the other way of looking at the universe is that there aren't like these inherent moral values. Things are like, they just are, and you need to have certain amounts of them in order to, you know, for things to be, you know, positive. And those are two like completely different like models for explaining the universe. And when you try to mash them together, it just doesn't work. It's like, you know, it's like, hey, we need a balance between God and Satan. You know, there's too many people with not cancer in the world. We need to give them some cancer to balance that out. It just doesn't work. Whereas if the balance is between things that are not inherently good or evil, like law and chaos is the popular one, but you could also go with, you know, air, water, fire, and earth, and then but then the Fire Nation attacks and it's bad.
But awesome.
Yeah.
But also awesome. so like that's part of the reason why the Force is like the mythology around the Force is so confused, right?
Yeah, I could have got on board had they decided to turn. I guess I wanted more out of Luke, but put like I wanted him to basically be some kind of like to have become some kind of like true neutral space druid, right? Where he sees that okay. Good exists and evil exists, but based on my family history, I know that extreme forms can cause damage. And I think about, you know, the like code of conduct that like the Jedi like force Anakin to adhere to, which like brings out the worst in him, right? By denying mm-hmm. him legit human emotions, right? So like that's an example of a force allegedly for good causing harm on somebody. And so it's like if we can reduce extremities, like these things are always going to exist, but if we reduce extremes, we can cause less conflict. Like
mm-hmm.
yeah, look,
I would have liked that.
If we wanted to just like sit down and like have a movie where we admitted that the idea that the light and dark are good and bad is actually wrong and they represent some other set of emotional values, and like we could reference the prequels as much as that makes me shudder and be like, yeah, the Jedi way of doing things means you ban feelings, and mm-hmm. that's obviously wrong if you mm-hmm. take that to an extreme, versus the Sith way of doing things is you just like do like whatever you want to do like right now. And like certainly there have been ad campaigns trying to convince me that's what the Sith is about. And if that was actually in the movie, it'd be kind of interesting. They wouldn't mm-hmm. be good and evil anymore. They would be opposing like value systems that have both good and bad properties. However, Star Wars will probably never do that.
Yeah. No, see, I really like the idea where like the Jedi are basically space lawyers, because if you do something good, it creates something bad, and they spend all their time trying to find like loopholes in the laws of the universe so that they can like sneak good things in there without bad things happening. And it's, yeah, that's,
I mean, that's what you end up with if you accept this idea of like good and evil being in balance, is you get your weird cosmic space lawyers. and you know, and your cosmic accountants too would be like, hey man, like I the only way I can stop this like genocidal conqueror from taking over this planet is to use Force lightning. In like the universe accounting, is that like a worth it trade? Like, am I going to create more evil by using Force lightning than this like genocidal madman? This is like, you know, you get weird stuff like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will say so. Again, the way that the dark side of the Force is traditionally actually shown in the movies, and no amount of ad campaigns saying that the Force will set you free if your dark side will change my mind about this, but the way that it's actually portrayed in the movies is that it's basically like evil with a really good sales pitch. Like it's supposed to be temptation is kind of what the dark side like represents. And it's either like the idea is that it's the two like takes that I've seen on it that actually work pretty well are like the take of the dark side being what happens when you carry your emotions too far. Right. Like, again, like, because again, in the original series, there's not any indication that the Jedi ban feelings. Certainly both Obi-Wan and Yoda seem to have feelings, no problem. It's only when we get to the prequels that they do that weird stuff. But what we do see in the original trilogy is this idea that if you go too far, like, if you get too angry and you, like, start to enjoy being angry, that's, like, dark side stuff, right? And that's pretty, like, relatable to a regular person, where it's like, okay, there's nothing wrong with being angry that somebody did something bad to you, but, like, going too far and being like, I'm angry that this guy stole my sandwich and so I punched him is like, all right, that's probably not good. You know, we could understand that as a dark side act. I was also a really big fan of in the Knights of the Old Republic 2 video game, the dark side was objectivism. And it was terrifying. It was so scary. There's like a scene where like this, you know, some guy on the street is like, can you spare a credit? I don't have money. And you can decide to give him a credit or not. And if you have your dark side lady in the party with you, she'll give you this whole spiel about how like giving people, like helping people just makes them dependent on you and it makes them weak. And you're actually like doing them a disservice by helping them. And it's this like, oh my God, Ayn Rand, how did you get in my party? And it was like, yeah, I can totally see how people would fall for this, because people fall for it in real life. They've absolutely fallen to the dark side if they become objectivists.
I like the idea of the dark side as being, I mean, that's an interesting case. I like it also as kind of the lure of like the temptation aspect is fun, but the movies really don't like, there's no like measured temptation. It's either like you're a pretty good person or like join with me and rule the galaxy.
Like, I mean, yeah, that's really like what most people face, right? Is it on a daily basis? That's your average problem.
It's like, no, can't I just like maybe like be the tyrant of a small town, like, and just get by? Like, that's all I'm really looking for.
That's what always gets me in Return of the Jedi, right? Like, because you like the movie and because we're used to it, I feel like we don't really examine how little sense that like Luke's temptation with the Emperor at the end makes.
Yep.
Because the Emperor's like, no, get really angry and strike me down. Somehow, that will not only convert Luke to the dark side if he does that, but he'll also end up serving the Emperor?
Yeah.
Right? And it's almost impossible to imagine exactly how that is supposed to work. Yeah. Right? Where he not only starts to give in to his emotions, but then he also ends up serving the Emperor at the same time. And
well, that's
what we had to work with, right? When they made more movies, it was that starting point.
Well, it's part of, I mean, that's actually a fairly common trope, even though it doesn't make any sense, is this idea that everyone evil is on the same team. So it's like, if you can convince someone to become evil, now they will be on your team. Even if their goals are completely different than yours and they have no reason to work with you, it's like, well, they're evil now, so now they hang out and are on a team. And wear the same kind of clothes, you know? So it is, you are absolutely right, Chris. That part never doesn't make any sense. They're struggling to come up with a reason for Luke's temptation and like why it's important that he resist it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think without Vader, there would be absolutely no sense of Luke's temptation at all. Like, Vader is critical, and the fact that Vader is Luke's father specifically is critical to selling the idea that Luke might even be in danger of going dark side. Because otherwise it's really just, again, the emotional component of the movies is just not well developed enough to pull that off.
Yep, I agree. Although we are about out of time for this topic. So that was a good thing to end that on. Thank you, Chris. If those of you at home, if we piqued your interest, you can leave a comment for this podcast on the website, mythcreants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you like what we do, send a few dollars our way through our Patreon. Every cent goes into the hoard of gold we lounge on like dragons. Just go to patreon.com/mythcreants. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.